Welcome back. It's Locked On NFL Draft, part of the Locked On Network. We want to say hello to all of you guys. Thanks for making us your first listen today. We're going to talk about what's going on at Auburn. Coaching change, QB change, a lot there to take apart. Kyle Hamilton, is he the top of the class with the safeties? And what's going on with Ja'Marr Chase in the NFL and how he got there based on our evaluations? Welcome to Locked On NFL Draft.
You are Locked On NFL Draft, your daily podcast covering the NFL Draft. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On NFL Draft. I am your host, former NFL and AFL defensive back, Eric Crocker. And as always, I am joined by Ryan Tracy. Ryan, how you doing, man?
I'm hanging in, man. Folks, you can always check me out. I'm the founder of Rogue Analytics, and we do a lot of pre-draft stuff. If you haven't seen The Athletic Matrix, it is the cat's meow when you're going to take a look at athleticism with prospects. So if you would check that out. And again, thank you guys for being here. And we're brought to you today by our pals. You know, we have a lot of great sponsors on these shows. If you guys would check them out and support the people that support us, we would appreciate it. Man, Eric, where are we going first, Croc?
Oh, we got to start with Auburn. Everything that's just going on with Auburn, from the Bo Nix benching to firing the coach to edging out Georgia State. Now it's like, where do we start first with this situation? And I think, obviously, Auburn edged out Georgia State, a team that I'm pretty sure Auburn was heavily favored in that game. But in the midst of it, Bo Nix got benched in the third quarter for T.J. Finley, who ultimately kind of led Auburn down in the last seconds on the game-winning drive. But Bo Nix, man, we're talking about a guy who was a number one dual-threat quarterback in the nation coming out of high school. Started as a true freshman, has started his entire time there, ends up getting benched. Yeah. What happens now for him?
I don't know. It's a tough situation, right? And I know that I will say this for the kid, and especially for the scouting community, they're looking at how he handles something like this, right? I think we talked about this last week as well. It looked like he took it in stride, and he was very much a professional about it, about, you know what, I'll be ready either way. And that's what the coaching staff wants to hear is, okay, you give us one option. Obviously, the young guy just got it done. He gives us another option, but he will be ready. And I have faith that Nix will be ready. And so I think that in the end gives them a little bit more of a confidence. Maybe he's not putting it together on the field lately, but I think that that means that they see that he might be able to get back to that.
Yeah, and this is not something that's just set in stone and he's just forever going to be on the bench and he's a backup quarterback now. He has an opportunity this week to kind of go out there and compete for a starting job. And like you said, I think one good thing is him handling that situation well on the sideline, especially for someone who there are a lot of mixed reports on just the character that he has. So for him to handle the situation the right way and in more of a professional way, I think that bodes well for him, especially since he has an opportunity to still kind of win that job heading into this game. I don't think that they're going to announce the starter until like later this week. So big time opportunity for him, and he could potentially get that job back. But a guy who won't be getting their job back, Cornelius Williams, the receiver coach. He was kind of brought in to change the landscape of the just recruiting and bringing guys in there, receivers and things like that, just coaching the receivers and all that good stuff. And he's fired. And I feel like that's something you don't see a whole lot, right? College receivers fired.
Yeah. I know people have thrown out the term sacrificial and things like that. Like were there drops that have been, you know, especially when we relate it back to Bo Nix, right? Like there've been some drops earlier this season, right? But is that a concentration fact? Is that the coaching? Is this something that had to be done, or is this something to shake up a staff that maybe is feeling the pressure to get everybody on the same page?
Yeah, I mean, whatever it is, I know that's no small thing, right? Especially if you are the receiver coach. Most of the time when we see receiver coach or positional guys, or even a lot of times coordinators in college football get fired, it's because of a change in the entire coaching staff, you know, from the head coach all the way down. So there's just a lot of turnover at the coaching position. You typically don't see a receiver coach who was kind of brought in. He was a kind of a hot name as a receiver coach and brought in to really kind of change the way that they're recruiting. And he's out of there now. And there's big money involved. I don't know if people know that. I know a former receiver coach at a Big 12 school, and he was making about $400,000 a year to be a position coach. So I'm pretty sure in the SEC, it's probably very similar to the guy I knew in the Big 12. So, I mean, just losing your job, that's one thing. But, gosh, that's a lot of money you're missing out on.
You're not kidding. And those jobs don't grow on trees. I think the bigger concern that you hit on it, though, is what this does overall to the program in terms of recruiting. And I think that was going to be his strength. What does that mean? Is that, that's part of what wasn't functional? We're not going to find out until we find out. And when we do, it'll be because someone else is in that role. Let's see what that does for them. But in the meantime, those two things together put a lot of turmoil on a program this week that has to turn around and get ready for another ball game. At the end of the day, do you think it's Nick's that plays?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's going to get it together. And unless they just feel like, you know what, we just ultimately need this spark and we want to go with this guy who's definitely more inexperienced than Nick's, who has played a ton since his freshman year. I just can't see that happen. He has too much talent, and sometimes getting benched in the middle of a game just kind of brings you back down to earth and lets you refocus. And I'd be shocked if that doesn't happen for Bo Nix.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's got to get the completion percentage up, and I think that's got to be a focus point. I'm sure this will do that. And a point that I want to focus on is something for you guys as well. We have an incredible opportunity here with a new app that you guys can go get. It's called Get Upside. And what it does, our listeners get 25 cents off of every gallon of gasoline that you purchase. You sign up with the app, you get it at the App Store, whether it's Apple or Google, wherever you want, whatever system you need, and you use the promo code Touchdown. And that gets you 25 cents on every gallon that you fill up. And then right now on your first tank, you get a bonus 25 cents. So if you're somebody who drives something like a diesel truck or something like mine, you're getting 30 gallons at a time. That's quite a little stack up. You're getting 50 cents back on every gallon on this first tank. It's a lot of people out there are making some cash back on this when they have to drive and have to buy fuel a lot. So check it out. You sign up, you get the app, you use that Touchdown promo code, that will get you in there. And what you do then is, as you rack up dollars and cents, you get to take it back out through your bank account, PayPal, or an e-gift card, or whatever you would like. So right now it's a special offer to get that 50 cents off your first tank. Use the Touchdown code when you go download Get Upside. And on the backside of that, you got to play some action. You know, you're making some dollars and cents. You might as well lay it down the line at betonline.ag for your pro and college action. You can get it all in one place. They are the number one spot with props and odds and contests all on their website. They've got everything calling both college and NFL football that you can get any interest in. There's a lot of interesting props out there this week. I'm starting to see that, hey, is this going to tip in this direction? There's an MVP thing. There's all kinds of stuff out there. So check that out. If you go to the website and sign up today, you can get 100% welcome bonus. That's double what you put down with a promo called NFL100. And they have all the other sports that you can bet on as well. Everything's all in one place at betonline.ag. Use our promo code LOCKEDON to get a little bit more for you. Check out betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. All right. I have trouble with one position when I can't get all 22, and it's early in the season for me. I haven't seen all 22 yet. And that's the safeties. And you are the experienced DB, and I'm dying to get your read on this kid because a lot of hype going already for the Notre Dame safety, Kyle Hamilton. Where is he? What do you think? Where does this stack up against the class of DBs the last couple of seasons as well?
You know, I have to look at, you know, obviously like him and where he stacks in, really just in this class. But I'd say just overall with what he is in theory, Kyle Hamilton, we're talking about a guy who's 6'4", 220 pounds, and just the range that he shows. That's the first thing that kind of jumps out to me. So when you start comparing him to the safeties in previous years, one, I mean, I think you got to go back to maybe Derwin James as a guy who's kind of built like this with this type of physical capabilities and this type of range in the secondary. And when I say range, I think typically when you're thinking of a safety, it's like, man, he runs sideline to sideline well, which this guy does. I mean, there was one play I watched a few weeks ago where he was the far hash safety, and he just beelined all the way across the field and made like this diving interception on the sideline, tapped his feet in bounds. And that was the time where I was like, what the heck did I just see? What did I just watch? How did that just happen? All right. So that's why I knew he had big time ability, but I continued to watch him. He made another interception in that game. And again, when you think of range, that's what you're thinking of. But this guy also has range in the run game as well. He can be deep in a too high system, right? Too high alignment. And at the snap of the ball, come down and make a tackle. And just last game or the game before, he came down from a too high position on fourth and short. It was like fourth and two. They had a tackle for a loss from a deep half alignment, which to me, that's something that you're just not seeing, whether it's guys just not having the ability or not having the speed or not having the anticipation, you know what I'm saying, the intellect to really diagnose the play that quickly and come down and make a tackle from distance. So, I mean, watching it and, you know, when we came on here, I was really excited to talk about him because of really just the overall play that he possesses. And not just that, man. We're talking about a guy who has the ability to match up with guys in space. You typically don't see that, especially with guys that are 6'4", 220 pounds. They tend to be a little bit more tight-hipped or they don't have quite the feet. But I think him coming from distance with his, you know, feet, his change of direction, his hips, his fluidness for his size, I think we're talking about somebody that's really special. And maybe I think when people were thinking about Derwin James, this is also the type of guy that kind of fits in that type of category.
It's really interesting. I mean, if we go by listed weight and height, and I know, guys, I know the list doesn't necessarily mean anything close to the truth, but we're talking about Coromosa's size, right? Like when you talk about a guy that's now playing linebacker in the league and in making that transition, I think versatility is the key here, right? Because you're right. When you come from, I've even seen him line up single high. I think it was last season, come all the way down in the slot. When a guy that size can dominate a slot receiver, especially in the first 5 yards, that transition to the NFL allows defensive coordinators to have the ability to disguise everything that they're doing, much like the Chargers do with Derwin James and a number of players that have that versatility to play every position in the secondary if they had to. I think that's the kind of skill set that we're looking at here.
Yeah, definitely. And I think now more than ever, just having that type of versatility at the safety position, you know, you look at guys and some guys you're having to hide. Like in the NFL, you can't hide guys. You have to have the ability to play in space and be able to coverage. You know, I watched the 49ers last night and against the Green Bay Packers. And there was this cover four beater that the Packers ran where they had the guy come from the right side and hook up in front of Jimmy Ward. And that held that safety down. And then the slot receiver from the other side ran a post all the way across the field. It was Valdez-Scantling. And he got on that inside shoulder of the safety that lined up over him and just ran across the field, outran him, caught a ball, big game. When you have a guy like Hamilton, he has the speed to be able to, okay, I'm in a disadvantaged situation because I'm already outside shade, but that doesn't matter because I have the range, I have the speed, the ability to get back on that upfield shoulder and make a play on the ball. So, you know, that's the type of things that you're looking for from this guy, not just the, you know, just the ability to show range and, you know, tackle well and all those things that he does. But when you're in a position where you are a little vulnerable, how do you react in that? And I think he can kind of cover up in those type of situations.
Yeah. I mean, he's got the gas to get there. That's all that it comes down to. And knowing what he's seeing in front of him, I especially that TFL that you talked about, that says to me a lot of film study that he understands his keys and that he's coming from that far back. That takes a lot of mental understanding about what the opponent is trying to do. And that's a key that you can't find everywhere. And I can't find everything that I need for my truck. So I go to rockauto.com, and that's the easiest way for me to do it. You can fill up whatever cart you need with everything you need for your vehicle, and whether it's a pickup truck or a sports car, whatever you got, and you can save some serious time and money, maybe 50, maybe even 100%, and you don't have to go to a brick-and-mortar store to do it. So it makes things a lot easier on me, and I'm sure it'll help for you too. Rock Auto is a family business, and they've been doing this for 20 years. Their prices are reliably low for everybody, whether it's you, me, the mechanic down the street, or whoever else is around. So go check them out. Go to their website. Get it, whatever you need in your cart. And then when you see that little box that says, how did you hear about us? If you would write in locked in for us, that would help. All those parts are going to be available to you. You can check them all out at rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car or truck is ever going to need. Check out rockauto.com.
So I'm excited to talk about this next thing because this is a polarizing topic that a lot of people have been getting on me about, and it's Jamar Chase. All right. So Jamar Chase, first of all, I had him as my wide receiver too. I think my biggest pushback on Jamar Chase, who is showing out well early on, I don't have his stats pulled up in front of me, but I know he has 4 touchdowns, and I believe it's all other rookie receivers combined have 3. So he's definitely doing an amazing job there. He's doing very well, catching the ball downfield. And I don't think that was ever an issue for Jamar Chase. I think his ball tracking skills were terrific. I think his ability to stack defensive backs was terrific. Never had issues with that. And I think he's showing that ability at the NFL level. All right. But I had him at wide receiver too. And my, I mean, there were a lot of people that were tagging him as a generational prospect. And that's where I had to push back. Like, ah, I think he's really good. And obviously, if you look at the numbers and you see how he produced in the SEC, that would lead you to believe, you know, elite prospect, all this other stuff, and really good. But I thought for somebody that isn't a big guy, right? We're talking about 6 foot, 200 pounds. He did not have the ideal separation ability, in my opinion, to be classified as that. Now, do you need to be a separator, a pure separator in the NFL or college to win? Like, no, you don't. I think all guys win differently, right? But if I'm going to put you in that generational tag, then you have to be extremely well-rounded, right? You look at Calvin Johnson. That's generational. 6'5", 240 pounds, running 4.3s. Like, that's generational. You look at Julio Jones. Maybe even you can possibly add A.J. Green to that. Like, those are the, like, kind of generational guys where they're just freaky, and you can't find anything like that for a while.
Yeah.
I didn't think that Ja'Marr Chase was that. I thought he was a very talented guy, but the separation thing kind of struggled. I struggled with that aspect of it, and I thought he would be really good in the NFL, but I thought that was one thing I was a little worried. And if it weren't for the speed to get on top, he'd really be in trouble. And we saw reports kind of coming out that in training camp, inability to separate, not separating like they thought he would. It's like, well, why did you think he would? He couldn't do it in college. So that was kind of my pushback. But he's doing well in the NFL, like I said, 4 touchdowns, making catches. Still, I don't think he's really separating well, but he's winning downfield. What kind of your thoughts on what he's doing right now, and how does that kind of align with your analysis of him from an analytical standpoint?
You know, for me, I agree with you. I don't see a lot of difference, but I will give him credit for taking that step up from college to the NFL level, that he's not struggling more. You're right. I don't see more separation. But I will say this, that it feels like when I see him move, especially on the bigger plays, obviously, I'm not watching every snap that he's taken to this point. But it does look like when he understands his opportunity, he's got his leverage. He is able to turn it on a little bit more than maybe he had to in college and maybe from what I saw as well. For me, that a lot of people throw the word freak out all the time. And I think it's gotten to the point now where people use it too much. And like you said, guys that are truly freaky like that, that have all of it going for them, they are super rare. Generational talent is a tough thing to come by. But let me ask you, who did you have as wide receiver one?
Oh, I had Devontae Smith. All right, okay. So we'll talk about it for a second. Devontae Smith, so one thing about me, and this kind of differs from the analytical approach, but I don't look at numbers when I go into like my film evaluations and my evaluations of a prospect. I mean, I know kind of what the numbers are, but I try to look at it from a pure ability standpoint and what checks off, right? So I'm looking at, you know, just all the ability and everything that goes into being a good receiver. Does this guy possess those traits, and does he possess them, and does he do it consistently? All right. So when you looked at Devontae Smith coming out of Alabama, and I think a lot of people are like, well, now you had better guys ahead of him the year before. I'm like, man, he was the most productive receiver at Bama his junior year with Jerry Jeudy, with Henry Ruggs. He was obviously the best receiver probably ever in SEC as far from a statistical standpoint last year. So all those things match up. But to me, it was the film. And if you take away the aspect of him being super skinny, 166 pounds or whatever it was, again, I try not to look at the numbers. I want to look at how he plays. He checked every single box. There was not a box that he did not check. There were some people that had an issue with, oh, well, he might not be that fast. And it's like, well, if he's not that fast, why is he running by Stingley, who all y'all have is being like just a lock number one corner coming out the following year, which is, you know, 2022 class. I'm just going to run straight by him, just going straight, outrun him, 80-yard catch. He did that to several guys. When you talk about just separation ability, that was there. He could separate from anyone, even big guys, when people think like, well, these guys are going to, they're going to manhandle him at the NFL level. Well, I'm watching J.C. Horn, who I thought the world of, he had trouble with him. A lot of things people don't understand. Those smaller, quicker, shiftier guys, skinnier guys like that, a lot of times, those are the hardest guys to get hands on, because when you go to get hands on them, sometimes you end up stopping your feet because you're trying to be so aggressive at the line of scrimmage. Stop your feet, you end up locking your hips. Then next thing you know, if you miss at all, that guy is gone and you're going to be playing catch up. So I thought from a separation at the line of scrimmage, his releases, terrific, very consistent, tough to get hands on him. In route, he was really good at the top of his routes. And even at the times when he didn't get the separation, he was extremely tough and strong with his hands at the top of routes. I thought he did a terrific job with that, working back, being an easy target for quarterbacks. And then just his ability to win on at all levels and on jump balls. He was terrific. He played big. So, again, if you scratch off the fact that 166 pounds, only 6 feet, 6'1", and just check off the boxes of what he does well and what doesn't he do well, it would be very hard to find something where it's like, you know what? I think he kind of struggles with this. That wasn't on film. Anything that people felt like he might struggle with, if they felt like he would struggle with something, it was them saying, well, he's skinny, so I think people would be able to get hands on him at the next
right,
level.
Right. Well, and the prognosticating what he's going to do in the league was the hardest part for me. Because right. I had them flipped. I thought both those guys, I didn't think either of them were, you know, super explosive. I thought they were both a little bit on the smooth accelerator kind of side. You know what I mean? But I had Chase above him slightly because at 166 pounds, it's one thing to deal with, you know, what the college game is in contact, especially in the stem before you actually execute where you're going, right? It's a whole other thing to get off of a true press from a professional at the NFL level. And that's what I was worried about. But you take care of that by moving him around to the point where he can't get somebody in his face. I think right. at the end of the day, that's what it's going to be for him. Can he eventually move out to an X? You think he fills out and adds another 20 pounds before his career is over? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't think he's that. I think he might max out at about 177. You know, like I don't think he's ever going to be a big guy. And we've seen guys again. Now this is the analytical aspect of it, because I've had these conversations with guys. Mm-hmm. There are two things that are working against him. One, his height and weight. There just haven't been guys that have that like success at being 6 feet or taller and weighing like under 175 pounds. Just hasn't really happened. You look at guys that are close to that, and you look at Isaac Bruce. You look at Marvin Harrison. Those guys are kind of in that same range from a body composition standpoint. And they did very well. Obviously, we're talking about like Hall of Fame type careers, but it's just very rare. And I think, and then the other thing he had kind of working against him from an analytical standpoint, which I just kind of learned about this year, breakout age. We're talking about a guy who I think he played extremely well as a junior, but I think a lot of the guys that kind of really break out in the NFL or heading into the NFL and have the most success from an analytical standpoint are guys that their breakout age is 19 years old, 20 years old, more along the lines of what we saw from Ja'Marr Chase. And that just wasn't Smitty.
Yeah. At the end of the day, age is one thing. And I've heard that one as well. I don't put as much stock in that only because I think different guys hit their natural talent combined with their knowledge of the game at a different point in their progression. Right. So I don't always stack that up about when the breakout is, but I think there's more ahead of him now. Same with Chase. I think the two of them, and I was a big Waddle guy, so just take that for a grain of salt. But I think both those guys, for having concerns or, you know, the drop thing in camp for Chase, as they both start to progress here, like, you know, completion percentage, it seems like it's working. I'm just checking out, you know, who's lining up where. And Devonta is pretty wide most of the time. I think he's at like 56% or 82% of his snaps are out wide so far. I'm just looking at all of them to this point. So he's earning that by making that connection and doing it on the field. And at the end of the day, that's all you can really ask for. Let me ask you this. Who ends up with the better season at the end of this year, right?
If I had to guess, man, I mean, and it's tough because on one hand, you have Smitty who they don't have any really established receivers and you feel like he shouldn't have to really compete for targets. So maybe he should get the most targets, most opportunities. But then you look at who his quarterback is, and he's not really a pure passer. Just played against the 49ers. He was 12 of 20-something or whatever it was. So he's not really connecting at a high clip. That can definitely hurt Smitty. So I think I'm going to lean more towards Ja'Marr Chase, who might not be a target hog. And, again, he's kind of competing for targets a little bit more because of T. Higgins, because of 83. I'm drawing a blank on his name. I liked him coming out of Pittsburgh. Can't think of his name right now.
Is that Tyler Boyd you're talking about?
Yeah, Tyler Boyd. Tyler Boyd. There we go. I like to come out of Pittsburgh. I don't know why I couldn't think of his name, but you know, you think he can compete for more targets, but he has a quarterback that's going to be willing to give him more opportunities. And I'm talking about Ja'Marr Chase. And I thought that's what Ja'Marr Chase needed the most, because again, mm-hmm. he kind of lacks that pure separation, and you don't have to win that way, but you have to have a quarterback that is comfortable with throwing those contested passes. And obviously he had a huge, amazing year with Joe Burrow. He's getting to the NFL. You see his passes that he's catching in his touchdowns. A lot of his passes, I bet a high percentage of them, are downfield passes where Burrow feels comfortable getting him that opportunity. And we're seeing that translate to the NFL world.
That's the difference. It's the faith. It's the, I'm going to put it up there down the field. And I know I've seen Ja'Marr do this before. I think it's really intriguing that both these guys are playing with guys they played, quarterbacks they played with in college, right? I'm torn. Like, I could see Devontae like coming on late in the season, like you said, for a lack of other targets that he has to compete for. Right now, would you guess that they're close, or that there's a lot of difference in their targets?
I'd say it's close, because I don't think that the Eagles are throwing the ball as much. Mm-hmm. So I'd say Devontae Smith might see a higher percentage of his quarterback's passes, but not seeing as many targets, because I don't think they're throwing as much.
And that's why you're in charge of this thing, man, because they're only separated by two targets. You are absolutely correct. I didn't have that perception. Obviously, I got to get more, but hey, I think that's enough for today, right?
Yeah.
Folks, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching us on YouTube. Make sure you click the like and the sub and the bell over there. And if you'd leave us a new iTunes review, we would appreciate it. We want to get feedback from you. We know we're shortening the show, and I know a lot of you guys like the length of it, but Croc and I are going to try to get in, and you're going to keep me on track, I think. Keep me pushing, because this is a challenge that I think we're both enjoying to this point. We hope that you're enjoying it as well. Thanks for making us your first listen today. I have a suggestion. You know, check out the Niners show for your second listen. See what he's talking about over there. Croc, have a good night. Folks, have a great one. We'll talk to you tomorrow.